Well, this is lovely. We can just sit and enjoy one another's company for a moment. Well, it's just lovely to see you all here tonight. I was just saying, we have hundreds of years of practice and training in this room. It is really impressive. And this is really the Sangha refuge. So let us make the most of it this weekend and just take advantage of one another's wisdom and experience over these many years. There were a number of reasons why I had asked if I could lead this retreat. This comes actually from things that some of you have said to me over the years, that if your first introduction to practice is at an introductory retreat, you might come away thinking about how to put monastic forms into your daily life and find that very puzzling. I worked in the guest office for years, and I remember at an introductory retreat, very enthusiastic woman came, and she took the schedule home with her after the retreat, and she called about a week later, and she said, "What am I doing wrong?" She said, "My family does not want to get up at 5:30. She said, "They do not want to recite scriptures during breakfast. They wonder where I am at 11 o'clock. I'm off meditating, and they are wondering where's dinner, and they don't want to sit in the evening." And, you know, the thing, I mean, there really was this wonderful kind of earnestness there, and you can see how difficult that could be. And she actually really didn't know any alternatives, you know. So it did occur to me, actually several people said this to me. And I thought it's possible then to come away thinking that you are somehow an offshoot of monastic life rather than a first-class, full, complete lay trainee. The Buddha said there were four classes of trainees, male, female, monastic, and lay. And so there is a lay practice which is full and rich in itself. And it has no form. It has no particular form because you are all different and you are all in different situations. And for me, this has always been the joy of it, the dynamic quality to it, the aliveness of it, that each one of you will find your way and it will be different than the person sitting next to you. And there is something about that, that we can all do this practice and yet we are all different. And this, for me, has been the life of it all these years. Was when I was a lay trainee, as has continued to be to this very day. That's why I am here. One of the other reasons is that for those of you who did not know Reverend Master Jiu, she herself did everything that she possibly could to encourage and support lay training. She gave hundreds of lectures in the Bay Area. Some of you sitting in this room were there. And these lectures have been preserved in books. They are on CDs. She named the guest house the Vimalakirti Hall after the extraordinary and exemplary layman Vimalakirti, about whom there is a sutra. Some of you know the Vimalakirti Sutra. So she herself was constantly encouraging and supporting us. And also because you yourself are a constant source of encouragement to us and inspiration when you come here and we see you. And this is hard sometimes to convince some of you. I've tried it myself. But it is true. So for all of these reasons, I'm just very glad that we are all here together. Gee, I already said all of this. So I encourage you to look with fresh eyes at your place of training and see the tremendous potential in it, wherever you are, whatever you are doing. Everything, every place is a place of training. Everything teaches, everything is practice. And I should say this is a four-day retreat, not because there aren't more than 4 days worth of things to talk about, but my thought was if it was a shorter retreat, it might enable you, more of you to come who have responsibilities elsewhere and would not have more time. So one of the things that I discovered was that how to pare down how to pare down all my years of training and really talk about those things that, you see, the things that I first heard are the things that have stayed with me all of these years. Maybe that's the way it is for all of us. But the teachings that I heard Reverend Master Jiyu give in my early days with her are the ones really that that I would say just opened up the world for me, and it continues to this very day to have that very, very spacious vista. So those are the things that I would like to talk with you about. You all have your own experiences and things that you have found helpful, and I'm hopeful that you will share those with us this weekend as the weekend progresses. I encourage you to have a more generous view of your own training and of your own aspiration. And I think We will talk about that throughout the weekend. This bodhisattva path, this path is so much wider than sometimes we can remember. And there is so much room on it for everything and everybody. So, the world in which we are doing this training, our present world, is a lot of suffering. And I think it's very helpful to remember from the Buddhist point of view that the human realm is the realm of birth and death, as we say, and suffering exists. You know, that's the first noble truth. Suffering exists. It is not a perfect world, and we are not hoping to become perfect people. The lotus is, you know, a universal sign, a symbol in Buddhism. Our master used to love to talk about this. Its roots are firmly in the muck, as she used to like to say with a big smile on her face, the muck of everyday life. That is where the lotus is rooted. And it grows a long stem, the top of which is the bloom of enlightenment. And she never turned away from it. She encouraged us to face the muck directly, look right at it. And she would talk about it in terms of recycling, because the recycling movement had just begun then. So she would talk about recycling greed, hate, and delusion into compassion, love, and wisdom. She would say, we all come with a good, healthy swatch of greed, hate, and delusion. And then she'd beam at all of us. She was her way of letting us know, you know, we're human beings, and this is what we have. This is what we're working with. And and it's a very encouraging symbol. It's a very encouraging symbol at this time in particular, I think, as many of you have expressed concern about the grave issues that we are facing in our environment, politically, economically. And, you know, our inner disharmony gets played out. And we can see the results of it not just, you know, just around us, but on a global level, a worldwide level. So, interestingly enough, at a conference a little while back, it was a monastic conference on Buddhism and environmental issues. And we were reminded that we need to pay attention to our inner environment. Oops, our inner environment, because it has a direct effect on our outer environment. So I think it's very helpful if we keep this in mind this weekend, this interplay of inside and outside and that relationship. Closer to home, some of the concerns that some of you have raised are the difficulty of finding employment, pressure to multitask, peer pressures, having how to respond to social injustice, the constant input from the internet and other electronic devices, how to know what's good to do, how to be compassionate. And I am hoping that you will please bring forth any other concerns that you have so that we can weave them into what we're talking about this weekend. So on our schedule, I wanted to mention that we have the Kanseon ceremony. I believe it's on Saturday morning. And that's the ceremony that takes place every morning in this shrine. Some of you may have seen bits of it. We start at wake-up. One of the senior monks goes into the Avalokiteshvara shrine. We also, you know, that's another name for Kanseon, compassion, and recites the Avalokiteshvara scripture. And what we are doing is opening the gates of compassion for the day. We are calling on Kanzeon to help us, and asking her to continue to shower down her blessings on all beings, and offering merit for any particular people who have maybe called the day before and asked for merit, that the merit of that ceremony is offered for them. So if any of you would like to join the celebrant that morning and recite, anyway, we'll work out the logistics of it, but join in the reading of the Avalokiteshvara. I also wanted just to mention a couple of other things. One is to consider taking advantage of the quiet of the weekend. Here you are, away from all of the sound and fury, which many of you have talked about, and the continual input of city life or even town life. How wonderful to just allow the silence to nourish and help you, and give yourself the opportunity, for those of you who haven't had this experience before, to just plunge right into it and just experience that the healing quality. The other thing I'm going to suggest is to try not to have conversation with the people that you came with, so that everyone can have their own experience. It's you have to resist the opportunity to compare notes, but it can be a very wonderful thing, actually, when you talk about it afterwards, to see it's a different experience for each of us. And that is really part of the richness of the practice. Now, the last thing, and I'm going to let River Master Ando talk about the details of how we deal with the use of the phone, the cell phone and the like, while you're here. Now, this is really radical. Consider the possibility of telling, if you feel there are people that you need to be in touch with, if you're worried, if you feel like in case of emergency you need to let somebody know where you are, consider the possibility of having them call here at the Abbey, because we check the phones all the time and we have an open line at night, as you know. If you tell someone to call you on your phone, then you will be concerned about checking your phone, will you not? I don't carry a cell phone, so I'm not that familiar. But the few times I have, it's just you feel like there's just this kind of pull. So if there's something that you can do, that will allow you to just be at ease here, and at the same time know that if there's something that you need to know about, you'll find out about it, I would encourage you to try to make that arrangement.
Yes, and that's not a rule, that's a suggestion.
Yeah, it's a thought. But
gosh, we all know, and sometimes we don't really know until we stop doing it, how much of a pull it is, too. I know one monk who was here recently told me that he does an email-free day a week. And I was doing that for a while, and I'd forgotten it. I got into the habit of, it's sometimes helpful just to give yourself a chance to free yourself from that. So if you can manage to do it for a weekend, I think you'll benefit from that greatly, or at least to greatly minimize it. And it's the same with conversation. I know when I first came here in 1973, 21 years old, and the practice at that time was to have, I think I was coming for a month stay, to have everybody have a week of complete silence. You're in what we call Tongaryo. So they're pretty strict. It was the Japanese practice. And that was just radical for me. I just... it, you know, so much came up. It was pretty intense, but it was incredibly helpful. I had no idea. The simple act of just not, it was not, we did obviously speak about very essential things regarding our work, but otherwise, it just so much throws you into yourself. And if you're ready for that, and I think you all would be, gosh. Now, we don't have that rule here. We don't require complete silence like that, but I can attest to the power of that. You know, it's just very interesting just to see what your mind does with that and all the stuff that we feel pulled towards that we feel we have to do or have to sort out or have to talk about or have to organize or have to comment on or ask about. The trouble with that kind of practice is that the people who really need to say something tend to be the most shy and don't, and the ones who, you know, so it can, we haven't kept it up as a practice because it can result in some people who need to be talking more in perhaps being too shy and repressing that. But you get the point of the benefit of practicing silence. And in my experience, you know, working meditation, many years of working in the kitchen here as chief cook, there is something particularly wonderful that happens when people get to work together without having to socially engage all the time. Not that I have a problem with socially engaging, but do you have to do it all day long, you know? And there's a certain, invariably a kind of quiet joy that is allowed to arise, you know, in the midst of that. And anybody who's worked with us for a time knows about that. And I don't think I've experienced that anywhere else in quite the same way other than in a monastery or a meditation group. So there are, you know, little perks to that. So I will second the motion there. Regarding specific rules of the monastery, just again, on when you're on retreat, we do suggest that you minimize your use of your cell phones and, you know, basically put them all aside and put aside your worldly business. If there's something absolutely essential you have to take care of, you can use a mobile phone or a cell phone in the Sanzen room during a rest period, you know, the little spiritual counseling room, or in your car, as long as that Sanzen room isn't being used for Sanzen. Or if you have a difficulty getting, you need to get online or talk with somebody and it truly is necessary, then, and it doesn't work to do it in either of those places, you can see one of the guest monks and then we'll work it out in the office. Yeah. Otherwise, just free yourself from some of those pulls. I think I covered that. You know, for resident lay trainees, we have an ongoing times when they can check their email and so on. That's basically it. But, you know, the point is to minimize distraction. Yes. And that applies to all of our rules are really designed to help us to be more present of mind, to be able to absorb the Dharma while we're here, to be able to experience each other's presence in a different way, as I was saying. That's a precious thing. So, you know, to enjoy that. Yeah.
Yeah, and to be able to live together in small quarters, that is.
And you see, you get to know your habitual impulses, right, which you otherwise really wouldn't get to know, you know, and to watch those and to be still with those. And you learn so much from that, as you all know already, but yeah. Just to emphasize that. That's a huge training aspect of the training, is just to see what your mind and your impulses are doing.
It's interesting to see how much we know about one another without anybody saying a word, isn't it? Can really get to know people in silence.
And what is it that is important to share? You know, our priorities shift a bit. What do we value the most? What matters the most when we're together with people? There's lots of things we like to know about people that are fascinating, but when it comes down to it, what is it we need to know about each other? What is it we need to actually do together? What can we share? What's most lasting and most valuable? So those are questions, I think, that will be answered in the practice. And of course, you all know this. Most of you have been to retreats here a lot. But I think every time we do a retreat, even the monks together, I find we experience that in a new way. You know, we go a little deeper with it. So it's always fresh, you know, when you're practicing together. So, was there anything else that you wanted to bring up about? I think the schedule is pretty straightforward, right? Most things will be down here in the Buddha Hall. We'd like to have our lay ministers be, obviously, since you are officially, out there a bit more than some of the other lay trainees, we'd like to have you as, if you don't mind, as examples. And so we're going to have ask them to lead some of the meals and evening service and so on, and come to some, help facilitate some of the discussions. And Reverend Master Koto, you're going to give the Dharma talks in here, and if you've been to some of our other retreats, sometimes they are given when people are sitting in meditation, but you are going to do it in this kind of kind of a setting. So it'll be facing each other, and same with the discussions in the afternoons, and the meditation will be as usual in here. Meals will be silent and in the dining hall, and we'll be reciting the alms verse and the five thoughts for all the meals, so we won't do the whole formal scripture. I guess for the Kanzeon ceremony, those of you who wanted to go to it, you'd have to be up before the rising bell, right? So make sure you have an alarm clock and just quietly get up and quietly get yourself ready and go. Bear in mind that if you're up before the rising time, which is 5:30, once you are out the door, it'll probably lock behind you, so make sure you don't have to get back in. And the ceremony begins at 5 minutes after the rising time. That'll be Saturday morning, 5:35. So we do ask you not to come in here before 5:30, just because some of the monks might be, those who live in the meditation hall, getting their beds put away and so on. Otherwise, we'll give you the details of that, maybe the evening before. And rest periods, we have these times when we suggest, when the hot water is on, so those are the times to take your showers, the rest periods after lunch and the evening meal. We have a somewhat complex plumbing system, so it seems to prevent people having cold showers if we turn the system off once in a while and then turn it back on. And don't try to understand that, because it's very mysterious. But it works. So there's a reason to that, and I guess it saves some energy too. So take note of the times when the hot water is on. It's noted in the kitchenette. I think, in fact, it stays pretty warm in between those times, but you might not be guaranteed of a hot shower other than during those rest times. Reverend Master Koto, did you want to say something about the spiritual reading, reflection, and quiet time, which is after the evening meal?
Yeah, thanks. We did schedule a couple of reading periods. I really encourage you to read. In the packet that is on the table, there are some things that I think we'll be referring to this weekend. One of them is Rules for Meditation. It would be nice if you had a chance. I don't know how that might work, but if you have a few minutes and you can read it before tomorrow morning, we're going to be talking about it at the meditation discussion after morning service. Also, there are some articles there which I have found very helpful. There are some stories and people's experiences in articles from the journal, which I always find to be an incredible resource of how people have found their way in training and what they've learned and can share with others. So I would just encourage you. We also, of course, will be talking about the precepts. So if you need to refresh your memory, there will be various versions of the precepts there. That's
really all I want to say. Good. Okay. And the spiritual reading is, you can do in your room. You can sit in the common room, sit outside. There isn't a particular location for that, but it just is a quiet time for reflection. and spiritual reading. So, yeah, otherwise I think it's a pretty straightforward schedule. We greatly appreciate your joining in with working meditation, of course, and tomorrow after breakfast I'll let you all know where your working meditation assignments are, since we have a lot of stuff happening before then. We'll be ending with the Achalanatha Bodhisattva Festival, which is an interesting one, midsummer. That will be, I think, pretty self-explanatory, but we'll give a little bit of ceremonial instruction before that. But if you don't know about Achalanatha Bodhisattva, that'll probably come up closer to the time. And I think Ramesh Kota was very happy to have Achalanatha celebrated at the end of her retreat, because he gives us a lot of teaching about meditation and training in the world, sitting immovably in the midst of all conditions. So that's about it for me. Oh, I had one thing that was I was asked to mention, and that is that during the working meditation tomorrow, starting at 9:30, we're going to have one of our local lay ministers, Kirk Yarnell, take some photographs, because we need to update our website and some of our other publications and things. He'll be taking photographs of working meditation outside primarily, but we like to give people the option of not being in a picture if you don't want to be. So if Kirk comes around with his camera, feel free to drop out of the scene if you don't. Are you going to be around with him? Okay, Reverend Helen will be with him. She's our webmaster. So, and we're not going to feature any one person in particular, but just it's nice to have pictures of people actually doing stuff here. And it's interesting how much the website does draw people. You know, when they see pictures, it's, oh, they're real people doing this practice. You know, they're not just, you know, reading or, thinking about it. So that'll be happening. Otherwise, it's just your regular schedule, where the weather should be a little bit cooler than it was last week. We had this amazing heat wave. It'll be in the 50s at night and maybe up into the 80s during the day. But you do have fans in your rooms, so please don't hesitate to have the windows open. Use your fans, and if it does get hot in the day, we'll be regulating the temperature in the Vimalakirti Hall and in here. So we won't suffer too much. We won't be having to meditate and fall asleep in 85-degree weather. Be as comfortable as we can be without being too comfortable. Of course, life has a way of making us just a bit uncomfortable. So I think that's about it. The fact that if anybody, Reverend Master Kodo had put out this email about topics, and two people out of your whole group responded with suggested topics or things that they would be interested in hearing about, and that's fine. That means you're all very accepting and willing and open, and that's very impressive. And at the same time, if there is something in particular that you would like us to address during this retreat, you still have time to bring it up.
Does anybody have anything that they would like to bring up now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s and 80s, when I was first in contact with this practice, a lot of the lay people had the idea that if you wanted to, quote, go all the way, unquote, you had to become a monk. And it seemed to me at the time there was a terrific rush of people coming to the monastery to be ordained. And I still have doubts myself about it, because I was a monk for a couple of years and I left here. And I wonder if there's something to that, about if you want to go all the way, you have to be a monastic.
We will talk about that.
Good.
What do you mean by all the way?
I haven't a clue. There you go.
We'll include that in the...
We'll include that.
Alan had something.
Yeah.
Here you go. Is
Please.
There a microphone? There you go.
She's got one, yeah.
The green light should be on. Reverend Vera, do you want to take... You got it? Okay.
Yes, I think so. I'd like to know about the place of Yume vis-a-vis Makyo in practice as an experience.
Okay.
Would you like to define that for...
In the instruction that I received back in the 70s from Roshi G.U. Kennett, she said that experiences during meditation can seize you like the old tar baby and Brer Rabbit, Brer Bear, Brer Fox. And once you get stuck, there you are. And so progress is distracted, and it is extraordinary, unusual. Perceptions, experiences, feelings, memories, thoughts, dare I say, powers. And to the degree that there is an ego attachment to these things, there is a cessation of forward movement all the way. And so she said, avoid them. And yet, in her book, she experienced a period in 1976, I believe, where she had episodic kinsho and periods of yume, paranormal. I just read about it last night in the journal as a term, a Japanese term, applied to what is generally dismissed in the literature as makyo. Makyo being phenomenon that is not essential, phenomenon that is ancillary to meditation practice, to spiritual progress, that is... potential danger, and generally there's a master or a teacher who will take a student away from that distraction, but in an unregulated and undisciplined life, there's very little to distinguish paranormal experience from madness. And so there's a fine line between an advance in meditation or spiritual practice and these distractions, and the discrimination of which is instructive and which is destructive is critical to advancing as an adept.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe we can address. We're going to have a discussion about meditation tomorrow morning, so that would be a good time to address that.
Yes, Jack.
Thank you. I'm wondering if distractions. Can be a way in which the ego is trying not to disappear, which is something that we wanted to do as we meditate deeply. And I'm talking about distractions like a passion for reading novels or a passion for video games or a passion for learning a foreign language or anything of that sort.
Is Reverend Vera taking notes, or do you need somebody to take notes on some of the topics?
I think if you don't necessarily have a question, you may have something arise as a result of our talks or in the in the discussion periods themselves. So I think partly the question, Jack, that you raised, and the others that have been raised, let's see if we can find a time to clarify them and try to address them. Please feel free, if you do have a question that arises at some point along the line here, to raise it. And if not, then that's okay too. Well, the point of my asking that question was simply that I thought if there were some things that you had on your mind, as some of you has mentioned, it would be nice to be able to address those and to just give you an opportunity to bring them up if that was the case. Yeah?
Maybe. You could talk about right livelihood.
Yeah.
Well, you had said in the, we were going to talk about the practice of Buddhism within a social and economic and political context, and I was wondering about the place and practice of activism, because I'm very sort of ambivalent about, I'd like to be more of an activist, but I don't know how, and sometimes I'm not sure if it's done the right way, the way some people do it, so I'd like to talk about that.
Should we?
All right.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
And there will be other opportunities.
Yeah, there will be others.
Yeah.
Good. These are all good questions. Thank you.
Great.